Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to episode 7 of Sports from the 6. Ali Kadarov Gianni, Flip Livingstone, Dwayne Turner, behind the scenes, Stacey Deshaun here with you from the Centennial Broadcast Booth. We have a very, very special guest today, the host of TSN 1050 Game Night for both the Maple Leafs, the Raptors, the Argos, and a co-host on Golf Talk Canada. Very proud to have Jim Taddy here in studio. Jim, thank you very much for doing this.
I do my best.
Jim, we know you're a very busy man, and we're going to start off talking one of your favorite subjects. There's a pretty special event going on, isn't there, Flip?
There is, Ali Khan, and it's that time of year where golf fans get excited for Masters Golf. We just had the tournament kick off with an excellent performance from a youngster, Jordan Spieth, 21-year-old golfer who's come into the tournament in the last three tournaments he's played, winning one, finishing second, and losing in a playoff in the third. So he's cooking, and he opened the round with a minus 8 and one off the course record. So it's exciting stuff, and I'm really excited to see what the rest of this tournament holds. And I don't know what you think about it, Jim, but there hasn't been a wire-to-wire winner at the Masters in 30 years, I believe I heard yesterday. Do you think this kid has what it takes?
Well, he's done well lately, as you detailed there nicely. A year ago, he had a really good first three rounds of the Masters and then had to get out of the way of the Bubba Watson parade. This right. guy's mature. I talked to him at the age of 19, and he's a very mature man. He actually is a man, even at 21. He was at 19. He had the wherewithal to not dive into the sponsors game at 19, at his own clubs, didn't search around for a sponsorship at that time, wanted to build his game first. So you really have to admire that maturity. What I liked about him last week at the Shell Houston Open was he muffed the sand shot on the playoff hole, and there was a lot of speculation as to whether it was somebody with a camera or somebody saying something in his backswing, and he just owned up to it in the best possible way right after the round. So this is a mature golfer.
Yeah, watching him yesterday, he really, really impressed me. There's a lot of pressure in this tournament, to say the least, and for a 21-year-old kid to go out there and perform the way he did yesterday, it's exciting for golf fans. It's exciting for Masters fans alike to see someone so young making their mark on the tournament so early in his career. I was impressed with the fact that he didn't really show much nerves yesterday for a 21-year-old.
No, he's not. He doesn't do that. He's mature. He has that kind of an image with everybody, and that includes everybody on the PGA Tour. This guy's dialed in. The best part of his game is his short game, and it's the best on the tour right now. And at the Masters, that's got to be the ultimate prize to have in the bag.
Definitely, and I guess with such a star-studded lineup of golfers, you know, he's got his work cut out for him. You know, it's moving day to day. Heading into the weekend, he wants to position himself well on that leaderboard. Who knows if he's going to be able to hang on to first with golfers behind him like Jason Day and Justin Rose, and somehow a beautiful round yesterday from Ernie Els. Do you think it's going to be one of these young guns to pull it out, or maybe somebody like the Big Easy pulling one out of the bag?
Great thing about the Masters, it happens on the PGA Tour regularly, but the great thing about the Masters is you look for that past glory to be recaptured. Ernie Els right. Did that at the Open a couple of years ago, has the ability. Perhaps the round of the day was Tom Watson at 1-under, and I believe he was the oldest PGA Tour player at the Masters to come in under par in a round. So, you know, there is some magic that way. I think when we look at Tiger Woods, we look at it the same way, that right. that maybe he could recapture the magic that he had before. And golf is like that. You could be bad one week, you could be bad one round, and totally correct it the next round or the next week. So, you know, it is great to look for those stories, not to say that they won't happen. You know, Jordan Spieth is certainly in the way, and Rory McIlroy will get in the way at some point too.
Right.
Jim, you talk about Tiger Woods and a guy that he came in very calm when he was talking to the media. He seemed very relaxed going into this tournament. For you, underneath all that, where do you see his game right now, and what did you see yesterday on day one?
What I saw yesterday in round one was the battle, the fight of a champion. I mean, he had some errant shots, but was able to recapture his game and get back. It didn't really hurt him that much. I don't know if that happens again today, and if he makes the cut, if that happens again tomorrow. But that's, you know, sometimes you forget how great and dominant the guy was. I mean, you talk about people that stir the drink. He was the drink. He recreated the whole drink for the PGA Tour. So sometimes we forget that. We had the bad visuals of last fall where he had a couple of bad shots and they would wince and grab his back and leave. This year we had just like right off the charts. Where would this come from? The yips. Didn't see any sign of either one of those yesterday. So this is a guy who's worked. You have to give him the respect because he's a dominant player. And, you know, at some point, he will recapture his own glory.
Jim, every time I watch the Masters personally, I'm excited to see one of my favorite golfers perform, Fred Couples. I feel that this is the kind of golfer, like, yes, he's in his past the twilight of his career, some would say, but somehow always manages to pull out an exciting performance at the Masters. Mind you, plus seven yesterday, not a good round, but I always feel like you can never count a guy like Freddie out of it, especially at Augusta.
Yeah, he's very well liked. Fred Couples had the back problems. A lot of people compare Tiger to what Fred Couples went through. He's he has recaptured the glory. He has had his moments since then. A fan favorite. What's not to like about Fred Couples? Big guy. I had the pleasure of walking up a fairway with him at the Altamira Charity Challenge probably 15 years ago, maybe a little longer than that. And we did a special because it was a charity. So I was mic'd, he was mic'd. And walked up a fairway with him, did that with Craig Stadler the same day, and just what an absolute thrill of a lifetime to walk beside this guy and understand that if it's not 5 feet from where they want it to be, it's a bad shot.
Right. And I guess, just a couple more things on the Masters here before we switch topics, but something that I'm curious to hear what you think about it is a golfer like Sergio Garcia. This is a guy, to me, that he's always had everything going for him in terms of skill and all the tools in the bag to win a major, but just that lack of a killer instinct or clutch performances. Do you think Sergio has it in him to win a major, maybe even this year at Augusta, in good position so far?
Yeah, I think he does now. I think he took a long time to mature. Certainly over the last 2 years, he's a much different fellow, a much different golfer, seems to be able to take it all in stride. Was immature in the past, reacted negatively to bad shots, something you can't do. Golf is a funny game. It teaches you a lot about life. You have to persevere. You have to live in the moment. And, you have to always be positive. And you have to visualize the shot. If you don't see it, it won't happen. So that teaches you can all of us could play golf and learn those lessons from golf. And maybe even at that level, a guy like Sergio Garcia had to learn some of that.
Jim, last question about the Masters. We got Spieth sitting in first currently. I had mentioned there hasn't been a wire-to-wire winner at Augusta in a long time. 3 days left. I know you've made your predictions before. After day one, who do you like being there on Sunday afternoon?
Well, I'm going to stick with Jason Day. I like Dustin Johnson before, too. Thing about the Masters is the final round has a life of its own. Last year, Jordan Spieth started, and I believe he had the 54-hole lead, didn't he?
Yep.
And started with a couple of stumbles, and then Bubba Watson just ripped through everybody.
Right.
So well that the back nine was a foregone conclusion. You don't know what's going to happen on Sunday. The Masters has a lot of chapters in the book. There's what happens on the first 2 days. The par three contest is always interesting. Then there's round one, which is a book unto itself. Round two is round three. And sort of the cumulative effect of the first three rounds is another chapter in that book. So I would just defer to let's see what happens on Sunday.
That's fair.
Okay, so Jim, just before we leave from the Masters, we just want to sneak one more question in there.
Oh, you guys are like that.
Sneaky.
So, yesterday, Danny Willett, he hit a 64-foot putt for an eagle. And something like that, as memorable as that is, I just wanted to know, what are some of the memorable moments you remember watching the Masters?
Oh, boy. I'm probably the wrong guy to ask that question to. I tend to delete stuff as soon as I've seen it. I have to look it up to remember what the heck happened. It's because there's so much. I don't have a lot of file space left upstairs. So, I would go back to, in recent memory, the Bubba Watson shot. First time he won the Masters, on the 10th tee goes to the right and comes out of the pine straw as only a lefty could. That's pretty dramatic stuff. So I'm just going to go with that. Any of the Tiger Woods shots, mm-hmm. Certainly the Nike commercial he created, where the ball stopped, logo up, and then dropped in the cup, and anything Mike Weir did, all of these things. I mean, it's a massive book. There's nothing that's not memorable about the Masters.
Just speaking on that, Jim, we had a chance the last couple of weeks to watch that new commercial that came out, the Rory McIlroy commercial, and just kind of that transition, passing the mantle from Tiger Woods to him. Just your thoughts on that.
Well, I think everybody hopes that that's what will happen. Jordan Spieth will have a lot to say about that because he'd like to be that guy as well. The great thing about being number one in the world is it's not meant for everybody. It takes a special individual because there's, you know, there's the maintaining the golf career and winning the tournaments that keep you there. Then there's this other big file over here called the business or the managing of the business of being number one in the world. There are a lot of demands. And sometimes it can take you away from the game or, you know, it's sort of a like a marketing lesson, right? And so today we have the big argument about here's the product and here's the machine that drives it. If you spend too much on the machine that drives it, you don't have the product. And if you spend too much time on the product, you don't have the machine that drives it. So the ultimate battle, you know, how do you balance everything? So that's sort of what Rory has done quite well because he had the personal issues, he had the management issues, and he seemed to clean his, his plate about a year ago, struggled with it for a bit, came out of it as a better individual. So, you know, Rory has had his growing pains. We'll see if Jordan Spieth gets there, how he deals with it. Others have been there and seem to be burned by the brightness of the light. Luke Donald, for one, got to number one and immediately went south. So that happens a lot. It's not meant for everybody.
All right, Jim. So now to switch gears, we wanted to talk to you about the Toronto Raptors. And obviously, we know that they look so much more promising going into the All-Star break. You know, Kyle Lowry was finally named an All-Star starter, and things just looked like they were going up. And now it just seems as if they might be limping going into the playoffs. There's been the injury to Lowry and just lineup issues. So I was just wondering, what do you think, if there's anything, that they need to do going into the playoffs to get themselves prepared?
I don't know what they can do. There's a limited window here. You know, clearly the team rides the offense. And really, in the NBA and in basketball in general, that's not such a bad thing. That can get you a certain distance. I guess the great debate for the Raptors is, so last year they set a franchise record for wins, won the division. This year they got to 40 wins, the fastest of any Raptors team, and are the highest scoring in franchise history. So there are a couple of things here. And one of the great things in sports is somebody will say, yeah, but. Well, you can't say yeah, but, because that cancels out some greatness. So how do you deal? Like, you can't really outthink yourself, right? You can't think, okay, so we're scoring a lot of points, and we got to 40 wins faster than any other Raptor team, so let's blow this thing up. You have to sort of let it play out. They have some interesting decisions to make. At some point, Terrence Ross will either have to become a bona fide starter or would have to be moved. He plays out of position. His problem is he's in his third year in the NBA, and so it's easy to say he's not what they need, and I think that would be an accurate description. It's no comment on him. It's a comment on the opening they have. And then, you know, if you move a guy that young out the door, then you preferably would like to get somebody of the same age back in the right position. Well, who is that? That's not an easy trade. I've called them too nice up front because I think Amir Johnson plays a heck of a game, gets just absolutely beaten physically on a nightly basis, and T. Ross, for me, the front court bothers me. JV is a work in progress. T. Ross is because he's out of position, and Amir is because he's physically at times not capable because he gets hurt. That's exploitable. So I don't know how you fix that, and I don't know when they fix it, but I think what you have to do this year is they're in the playoffs. Let's see what happens, and if they get to round two, that would be great. If they don't, I think they'll come to the same conclusion, whether they win the first round or not. They have to fix the front court, and that's not an easy fix.
Jim, you talked about Lowry, the injury to him, and JV being a work in progress. Really, we've seen these last few games, although it hasn't been consistent throughout the lineup, we've seen JV sort of show hints of taking that next step. They've gone to him a little bit more late in games. Dwayne Casey's starting to show him a few more fourth quarter minutes, and we've also seen a reemergence of DeMar DeRozan, the scorer from last year, the guy who wasn't hesitant to get into the paint, take the contact, and get to the free throw line. In a way, I don't want to say it's a blessing in disguise, but has this Lowry injury allowed other guys to step up and refine their game before the playoffs, and is that a positive for the team?
Well, I think it's a positive. I think you know, the original departure of DeMar forced Kyle Lowry to overachieve and eventually broke him down. And when he departed, you know, so they're playing together a little bit after DeMar comes back, and DeMar couldn't find his rhythm. Because Kyle Lowry stepped out, DeMar found his rhythm. So if Kyle Lowry can do the same, they're back to where they were when they were winning in November and early December. Injuries through the course of a season, whether it's the NHL or NBA or Major League Baseball, because the seasons are long, wouldn't apply to football, actually allow you to play people in other positions or raise their demand in terms of what they have to make for a contribution. That's always good. I don't think there's a negative there at all. My only question would be, when Kyle Lowry comes back, and it may well be tonight against Orlando, you know, what does he come back as? Is he all there? And how does, when he finds his rhythm, does that offset everybody else's? Because clearly, when DeMar came back, there was a bit of a problem, remixing the chemistry. So, you know, and the window is short there.
Jim, you've touched on the front court and how you feel that it's an issue for the team. I have to agree with you wholeheartedly on your assessment of Amir Johnson and of Jonas Valanciunas, and it's been something that we've talked about here in the booth. We feel that, and personally I feel that Valanciunas is the key to the success of the team. I don't know if that's an overstatement or not, but the lack of confidence that we've seen from Casey in his big man, I know he's getting more minutes now in the fourth, which is exciting to see. I just look at the teams that the Toronto Raptors are going to have to beat if they make it out of the first round. Cleveland, Atlanta, Chicago. There's some big men there, Pau Gasol, Paul Millsap, to name a few. Valanciunas is going to have to find his game in quick. Do you think it's a possibility this season? You said he's a work in progress. How far away is he?
He is a bit away, in my opinion. First of all, you don't want to go near Cleveland in the playoffs because you're never going to get a call against LeBron.
Right.
It's going to be a big factor. That's what makes the NBA the NBA. Total contrast to the NHL, where you could have a $500,000 player hack and whack an $8 million player and cancel him out. And that's why I applaud the NBA. Having said that, if you don't have a stud player like LeBron, you're in a spot of trouble. JV, for me, is offensively clumsy at times. When Dwayne Watson and I do the games, there's two JVs offensively. The one is he gets the ball, turns and shoots. The second one is gets the ball, double clutches, looks around, and almost gets stripped of the ball. And the other deficiency would be, so he has to be confident that way, just to use his body and shoot, because really when he delays it, it doesn't work. The other thing that he doesn't do, and he'll do this quite repeatedly, is he shoots away from the basket. Now, a guy with that kind of size, in my opinion, should be leaning forward, using his shoulder to create some space for himself. And these things are, when you watch him play, they're mechanical. A true talent, they wouldn't be mechanical. They'd be second nature, right? That's a feel for a game. So these are things that I don't know exactly when they, you know, when they progress or when they mature for him. He's quite a bit different than he would have been a year ago. The thing, you know, sometimes when you hear people speak all the time, there's a buzz or a catchphrase that they use. And for Dwayne Casey, he constantly refers to the Raptors as a young team. The translation is they're a couple of years away. So it's going to take him a couple of years. But I also believe that if he was surrounded by a little more size and a little more meanness up front,
yep,
he wouldn't have to do it all himself that way. So,
sure.
So that's a chemistry thing too. So it's not all on him.
So Jim, you bring up the possibility of Kyle Lowry coming back to the lineup today to play the Orlando Magic. And something that I was interested in wondering what you thought of is that means Gravis Vasquez goes back to the bench, which means you have Vasquez and Lou Williams coming off the bench. And I was interested what you thought of those two being coming off the bench, because there has been a lot of criticism about Lou Williams and the way he, I don't want to, for lack of a better word, hogs the ball during his possessions. And there are a lot of people who believe that he's doing some of what Vasquez would do last season. And to have both of them pretty much coming off the bench and doing the exact same thing, I was wondering how you think that chemistry is going to evolve. And with Lou Williams being a free agent at the end of the year, do you think he'll be coming back to be doing the same thing?
I don't know if he'll be coming back. It's a difficult question to answer because you don't know what Masai Ujiri has, he probably has like plan A, B, and C based on what the team does. I think they missed John Salmons quite a bit. He added a little more defensive ability back there on the bench. I can see the repetitive nature of Gravis Vasquez and Lou Williams. It's no secret what Lou's going to do when he's out there. He's going to shoot the three ball. I mean, that's what he does.
From the suit.
Yeah, he's going to live and die with that, and so is the team. I find, anytime, they have the great stat, right? When Lou Williams is the leading scorer, the Raptors win most of the time. Well, yeah, that makes sense. If your leading scorer is in the bench, then assuming everybody else is coherent and doing what they're supposed to, then that's nice icing on the cake. Lou for me is he's relevant, but all these things are, you know, you have to have complementary pieces, and I'm not a big guy for. I don't like I don't like it in hockey, and I like it less in basketball, to have what I call duplicate players. When you have too many guys that are doing the same thing, then somebody's not doing something else. So I could buy into that theory.
Jim, I know we've mentioned the weakness of the front court. Addressing that issue in the offseason is definitely going to be on Masai Ujiri's plate on some level. Looking at the draft upcoming, some solid big men talent there. Karl-Anthony Towns, Jahlil Okafor, Willie Cauley-Stein, to name a few, in the top 10 projected. Do you see Masai making a move for a top pick? Or maybe trading one of the players we've just mentioned to upgrade in the front court and get us some size?
That's an intriguing question. I would like him to move up in the draft. I don't think there's a need for another Bruno Caboclo. This is a long-term project, right?
Yep.
So, I mean, when you watch him, you go, what is it? This guy must be 3 or 4 years away. I mean, so that's a first-round pick. So what? You can't have two of those guys. That would be totally irrelevant, right?
Yep.
I would hope so. You know, when you watch Boston play, look at the growth in Olynyk in a year's time. That's pretty phenomenal. Guy's going to be a stud player.
Jim, as we move towards the playoffs, there's been...
Here it is. There it is. Been, I was waiting for that, Jim.
There's been a lot of talk about not so much tanking, but positioning. Getting yourself in a position to have the easiest matchup possible to the Eastern Finals.
Oh, yeah.
There's been a lot of talk of the Raptors finishing fourth because they own good records against Washington and the Atlanta Hawks. For you, when you look at that, what are your thoughts on playoff positioning? We know we saw it last year. The Nets got the Raptors, and that experience, they say, got to the Raptors. What are your thoughts on that, on positioning yourself for the best first-round matchups possible?
Well, so what does that get you? It gets you probably 3 or 4 home dates at the most in the second round, which is a lot of money. I get all that, but I don't like that whole concept. The same with the tanking for the draft pick. I think it's ridiculous. You do so much harm to your franchise when you do that it takes years and years to repair. I think that I always like the team to get into the playoffs because it identifies a weakness. And does it really matter if the weakness is identified in the first, second, third, or championship round? Does it matter? As long as it's identified and you repair it, that's the process that goes forward. Anything else does not go forward; it goes backwards. So that it doesn't really matter to me who they play in the first round, because if they lose, we'll know why, and it should be corrected. And if they don't lose, then sooner or later they're going to lose, and they're going to have a problem, and that has to be corrected. So that to me is the whole process: identify the weakness, correct it, and do better next year.
Jim, we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you. You've seen all these teams come through the Air Canada Centre this year, and we want to know from you who your pick is as a favorite heading into the playoffs in the NBA, and that ties into the MVP pick. We know Steph Curry, James Harden, Russell Westbrook have all had great seasons. If there's a favorite for you,
I'd just go with the East. I wouldn't go anywhere near Cleveland. I mean, Cleveland and Chicago would be one hell of a series, wouldn't it?
Definitely.
And with Rose back now, that would be intriguing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And MVP?
I don't have one. It's LeBron.
LeBron, okay, LeBron. Interesting. I think what Jim means is I'm the MVP, so I'll take that.
No, if I meant that, I would have said that.
Yeah, let's be clear. For the record, I'd personally like to throw my support behind Steph Curry. I think he's had an amazing year. I think he deserves it. That Golden State Warriors team is, yeah, definitely a deep team, but he's been impressing all year long.
Yeah, that's the West. Okay, good.
But quickly, Jim, before we move off the NBA, and I swear I'll come up with another topic on the NBA next time, but
would
to talk
nice.
About the big men again. Thanks, Jim. I love your support.
Jim never ceases to make me laugh.
To talk about the draft next year upcoming, the Raptors are sitting at 20th position right now in the first round. A player like Frank Kaminsky from Wisconsin is a 7-footer. He's currently slated to go around the 16th pick. Would he be a good fit in Toronto? Would you like a player like that here?
You know, I can't say, you know, because it's not just about the draft pick. It's about what other moves they make and you know, how what the roadmap is for them to succeed.
Right.
You know, you can't sit here and say he'd be a good fit and here's how he would fit on this lineup, because you'd have to convince me that a lot of the lineup is back next year.
True.
I mean, once they deal with that, how do you solve that front court problem? And, you know, Amir Johnson is such a great player. I mean, how do you deal with that? You have to be respectful, right? And T. Ross is a great commodity. So you know, if they don't get the right exchange for these guys, you have to keep them. And so
right.
I don't know what happens.
And speaking of who will be here next year, moving into another topic with the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Oh, wow.
Coming off,
wow.
Arguably.
Excited?
Well, I get the vacuum cleaner out.
Yeah, we needed some sound effects there, some dishes breaking or something. Yeah. But, yeah, like, thank you. Thank you for that.
That's extra, by the way.
Yeah, we'll look into the budget. But coming off one of the most embarrassing seasons,
oh boy,
in Leafs history. You know, we don't in this booth have the gift of experience, but it's been a tough year for Leafs fans. And I know they just, with their last most recent road loss, set the record for their worst road performance ever by a team.
One road win entering for all of 2015.
Isn't that exciting?
Exciting stuff. So in terms
character.
Of in terms of moving forward, where does this team go? What does Brendan Shanahan, Kyle Dubas do with this group?
Well, it's, you know, the teardown is still not complete, so it's hard to rebuild when you haven't torn it right down.
Right.
I guess the ultimate question would be, the contracts that have big money and long term, what do you do with them? What do you expect to get back for them? How will you handle or manage that situation? For me, my attitude on it is I can miss the playoffs with anybody. And having said that, I don't need anybody with any kind of long term on my roster, because the roster is not competitive. So the grand decision is, when you deal with people like Dion Phaneuf, the captain, is he going to be your captain? The answer is no. How will he stay here? And for Phil Kessel, are we going to build around him? And if the answer is not for the next 3 years, then why would he be here? So once you reach that decision, then your next decision is, are we trading the player or are we moving the contract? Because those are two different things. If you're trading the player, you're looking for equal value. You probably won't get it.
Right.
And if you're trading the contract, that could be done.
Now, I know everyone right now is talking Connor McDavid, talking draft lottery, where will the Leafs get a pick? For me personally, and I'm sure we'll talk about that in a second, but for me personally, what's more intriguing is what's going on in net. Will Bernier be back? Will they trade Bernier? I know he's come out recently and said he loves Toronto and would love to stay here, maybe trying to endear himself to the fans a bit. Personally, I like a player like Jonathan Bernier, and I could see him fitting in moving forward. I just personally would like to know what you think about the goalie situation, Jim, because clearly a winning team needs a bona fide number one.
Well, first of all, it's not a winning team. Second of all, because it hasn't been torn down yet and the rebuild hasn't started, I'm going to predict that this team will go through 7 to 8 goalies over the next 4 years or 3 years.
Wow.
And so having said that, this is sort of another variation on the Phil Kessel question. Why do you want to sign a goalie for any term when the team around him is just going to kill him? So that's not where you go with that. To me, I would give him maybe a 2-year contract, because he's an RFA, and if he didn't like it, too bad, because you're going to burn through until you have the right blue line in front of him, until you have the forwards playing the right system. The goaltender is almost irrelevant.
Okay.
That's it?
That's all I got for now, Jim.
Nothing, really.
I got one more for you.
Okay. Let's
talk a little
bit
about...
Kind of disappointed with the timing there.
A little bit about the business side. The management side. The Leafs have a guy in Dave Nonis who's... No one's really quite sure. He is, by title, the general manager.
Oh, another question, Mark.
Right now.
Lovely.
The best question is only for you, Jim.
Yeah.
Well,
where
he's
are
a guy
they?
Who...
Wow.
Boom, boom.
They know he's got...
Hit by a pitch.
He'll be here all week, folks. Tip your waitress.
I can't even. I'm trying to stay composed right now, but they know that he is listed as a GM, but he's a guy that no one's really sure. Kyle Dubas has had his imprints on a lot of the moves. Brendan Shanahan, of course, has had his imprints on some of the moves. Where does Dave Nona stand? Is he a guy that comes back next year?
Boy, just another grand question. Based on, you know, this is part of the problem. So you have a team president that comes to town, actually a corporation president who comes to town, and Mr. Lewicki, and he rearranges the whole operation. Some people are let go for whatever reason, and a couple of years later, he decides to leave. Before he leaves, he brings in a team president who didn't hire the general manager, who didn't really hire the coach as interim. So when you change that guy at the top, or that individual at the top, and it has a ripple effect on your front office, and then has a ripple effect on the team. So when you change that Mr. Lewicki, you really put what happens below him and on the roster into about a five-year loop of doing things over and over again, because the thrust of the organization changes. So now Mr. Lewicki leaves, Brendan Shanahan is there, and we don't know who that MLSE president is, but he may not agree with what Mr. Shanahan is doing, and then we may start all over again, or not. Or Mr. Shanahan is allowed to continue on and makes his call on his general manager, and then makes his call on his coach. But the point is, when you go back to all the teams that the Leafs or Leaf fans want them to copy, those three question marks or four question marks, corporation president, team president, general manager, and coach, don't exist. You're talking about, and when you compare them to Detroit, those people have been in place for 15 to 20 to 25 years and have not changed, and that's how you do it. So before you can worry about the roster, that chain of command has to be solidified and in place for a number of years.
Jim, we know you're a busy man, and we'll
I'm a
wrap
busy
this
man.
Up.
I gotta go.
We'll wrap this up with one final question.
Wait a minute. When you say the final question, is Ali gonna sneak in?
Nope, no more sneak ins. He's gonna wrap it up.
Or Dwayne, who's just hovering in the weeds, will come in and say, "Now, one more final question."
This is the final question.
The
for
final,
you.
Final,
question.
Final, final,
final,
question.
Final.
I usually work alone. Okay.
You're a GM in the NHL. Either you're the Buffalo Sabres, Carolina Hurricanes, Edmonton Oilers. Obviously, the first overall pick is going to be Connor McDavid.
Yeah, you have don't like Arizona? What's
no, mean? Arizona doesn't need to be mentioned at this point. But
is there a reason?
They're second last.
There's bias. Yeah. No. Oh. So oh, no. You have the second overall pick. Who are you going with? Jack Eichel, Hanifin, Strome? Who's your pick if you don't have Connor McDavid?
Well, I think the consensus is Jack Eichel. Why would you even ask that?
Like, Jim, you're a hockey mind. I don't know if you got some tricks up your sleeve there. Maybe you want Hanifin for the size on D. Who knows? We're trying to switch it up here at Sports from the Six.
You can't outthink yourself. The guy's been rated number two for one or two all year. So you can't say, do the Bruno Caboclo draft pick here. And
hey, crazier things have happened.
I know they have. And where did that, how did that turn out? Not, okay.
Jim, on behalf of myself.
I thought this was my question.
No more questions. We're wrapping it up. On behalf of myself.
I'm running out of here.
Class is going to start.
Dwayne, Filippo, and Stacey, I want to thank you so much for coming in. And always a good time. Always great cracking jokes with you and talking sports.
Always great to do an assignment for the students.
Thank you very much, Jim.
Really
appreciate your time.
It.
All right. Have a good day.
And see you all next week on Sports from the Six.